This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. When Beverly Scott became the new general manager of the MBTA last month, she inherited a slew of challenges. Perhaps the most daunting is balancing a very unbalanced budget to the tune of $132 million deficit. Beverly Scott joins me in the studio now, and we're opening the lines. So if you have a question for the new MBTA GM, this is your chance. What improvements do you hope to see in the MBTA? Give us a call at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. And maybe we can hear from some of those people riding with Beverly in her first few days riding the T. Beverly Scott, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So how are you finding the job in just your first week? You just started mid-December.
It's wonderful. I've worked at 8 systems. I've been in this industry 35 years, so I have some reflections. So as I've been letting the tea just kind of like roll through me, it's very, very special, okay? And I was just talking to the secretary this morning, and I told him, I said, let me tell you the feeling that I have about the T. I said, which is different than I've had any other system I've worked. I've worked New York and Jersey and D.C., a bunch of different places. I said, let me tell you what it is. These are really high stakes. I said, the T belongs to Boston and to the people and to the Commonwealth. But Bostonians, it belongs to them. I said, so the way that I feel is that people have entrusted us and they have put this, their tea in our care. Okay. I said, now I will tell you that that is a different feeling. It's not to say that other places, you know, we appreciate the criticality of and all that. I said, and I'm going to tell anybody that it's not a love-hate relationship. As I have talked to customers, I would never say the word hate. It is, I will tell you, it's like a family member. So particularly the family member who's your older brother, and when he gets on your absolute last nerve, you're going to throw a spitball at him across the table. Now, you can talk about him, but nobody else better, okay? So honestly, the T is such an institution. I told someone, I said, you know, it's, you know, Beverly, what was part of the why of coming? It is. It's transit royalty, and it is. It's like old fine wine, okay? But that's a feeling of just a personal nature and connection with this system that I honestly have not experienced in any of the other places that I've worked.
Well, that's quite something. We should let people know a little bit of something about you. As you said, you've been in the business some 30 years. I think a lot of people would be surprised to learn that you at one time were a professor.
Yes.
And got interested in transportation on a fellowship, and you asked specifically to learn more about transportation. Why? What about transportation fascinates you?
Let me tell you what's kept me in. And then I'll go back and tell you how I said it was transportation or sanitation, okay, was what I said. But what keeps me in this business, and I love all the big things that move, and we are millions of pieces of things that move from, you know, big cars and, you know, we got the buses and the this and that. But what has honestly kept me in this business all these years is the absolutely profound impact that we make on people's lives and on communities. Okay. And so I am one who, and I say that from absolutely the bottom of my heart. I mean, we make it possible for folks to be able to knit their lives together, to be able to get from point A to point B. And that is, and we've got lifeline riders and we've got lifestyle riders. And my point is that we want to provide the best service. And I don't care whether we're carrying, I'm just as honored to be able to carry a prince as a pauper. Okay. I mean, but it's all about, so it's all about the people. So I can get an adrenaline high when I see where there was a shelter someplace and it's cold outside and that mother's there with the stroller underneath it or the person sitting down and got their feet crossed. And I know that just, you know, 6 months before it wasn't there, or the curb cut that's there that makes it possible for the person to be able to negotiate their way better. And then the other thing that I've seen is the absolutely startling impact that of development and neighborhoods that thrive and prosper because we put that line there. And, you know, surely when it's a rail line, but I've seen the same kinds of things happen when it's bringing good mobility and access to a community, and that can be very, very good bus service as well. So what I tell my staff when I said, so it does matter, okay, it really matters where we choose to make those investments and how and the quality and the caliber of the service. So I love the – I tell people all the time, and I guess I really began to understand this more. Probably didn't understand it as much the first 10 or so years that I was in the industry, is that we're not the it. Transportation, transit, we're kind of like blood and vessels, but we're not the it. The it is actually the outcomes that people need a system to accomplish for them in terms of mobility, in terms of access, in terms of jobs creation, economic development, sustainability, all of that. That's the it. And transportation is one of the big investments that you make that helps us to be able to accomplish that it, okay? So I laugh with people all the time. I say, look, I can want to change every light. You want sustainability? Well, part of the issue, the deal for us with sustainability is that we have a voracious consumption and appetite for petroleum. If we don't wind up changing that paradigm, ain't enough light bulbs we can change that's going to wind up making a difference, okay? And so making those strategic investments in, and I think we need every single mode of transportation, we need good streetscapes, we need all of it, okay? But making those strategic investments that are smart investments that help us to be able to have a different type of life and world, if you will, are absolutely critical. So, you know, so the stakes are, so how I started going from being this professor, back in those days, and if this was a program that they were going to select four people to work in city government, and then you were going to do this for about 18 months, and then you were going to go back to your own place. So here I was, this little government and public affairs new professor, assistant professor. So I was one of the people they selected. And back in those days, and here I was a woman, and I was a person of color. And back in those days, I swear to God, I think everybody was in a relations area, okay? And I was determined I didn't want to be in a relations area. So that's how I said, I'm going to either work, and I would like to have a placement in either sanitation or transportation.
Now, when you say relations, you mean media relations, public relations.
And back in those days, mm-hmm. it was basically community relations. Mm-hmm. And I take nothing away from those areas, but it was basically you're going to be community relations or human relations or something of that nature. But the, quote, harder areas, if you will, which were very related to infrastructure, which would have been transportation, an area like sanitation, you did not find that many people of color or women. Mm-hmm. That were in areas like that. It was almost like, oh, my goodness, a woman out in a bus depot or garage. Oh, neither the twain shall meet. And so I said that I wanted to be in either transportation or sanitation. And so I started out in an 18-month fellowship at that time with the City of Houston's Office of Public Transportation.
I am speaking with Beverly Scott. She is the new MBTA General Manager. You can speak to her if you'd like to ask your questions about her few weeks on the job. She started mid-December. She was unanimously decided upon by the Massachusetts Department of Transportation. She's worked at several other systems in the country, including nearby Rhode Island, and most recently, Atlanta. And we have Bruce from Cambridge on the line. Bruce, go ahead, please. You're on 89.7 WGBH.
Beverly, good to meet you. This is Bruce McHenry in Cambridge.
Oh, it's such a pleasure.
Thank you. And I you're very interested in knowing what your vision is and what you're able to see of the future of the MBTA, 5, 10, 15, what's it going to look like in 2030, do you think?
Well, I hope what winds up happening in 2030 is that we have accomplished at least a goal of being able to try to increase the travel that winds up taking place by transit and alternative modes, that we're able to reach that goal of at least trying to treble that. And the bottom line is that we also have a goal from a Commonwealth of trying to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 25% by the year 2020. Now, in order for all of that to happen means that we're going to have a much more robust system than we have today. I'm a very big one for it won't be about just the T alone, a very big one in terms of seeing how it all comes together. So streetscapes to me are extremely important. Biking, I always say everybody is a pedestrian first, okay, I'm saying, so being able to, and I really like the walkability aspect here, but I think that trying to bring it, the synergies of trying to bring it all together in terms of accessibility features. Definitely, I am one that I'd love to be able to to have that vision out that says that we have all of the issues in terms of state of good repair well under control, and that is not an easy thing, particularly for a system that is over 100 years old and by that time will be 135, 140 years parts of the system. So I'd like to be able to say that we have that we're able to say that we know how to make sure that we've kept everything up to par that is the core system, but that we've also been able to make strategic investments in terms of expansion. And so, yes, I do not think that this is a discussion where we're only talking about fix it first. I think we have to make very good and strategic investments in expansion. I do think the Green Line expansion makes sense. I did do Rhode Island for 6 years and I'm pretty familiar with parts of where the South Coast rail system will go. And yes, those investments are needed as well. I'd like to see a significant expansion in terms of commuter rail service. Much better service. I'm actually one who is an advocate for high-speed rail within the United States. I think that in the whole area of infrastructure, we've fallen miserably behind, and I think that this Northeast Corridor has tremendous implications in terms of a real potential there. Okay, I certainly think it should be one of the corridors that winds up being part of a national high-speed rail network. And then I'm going to come back to, and this has been something that's come out fairly recently in a set of reports. I think it's the Dukakis Center in ULI, which is this whole concept, particularly for older cities like ours, of core capacity, which means that it's not just about expansion. That's expansion always that it's further out. But we have to also make strategic investments in terms of increasing the throughput and the capacity for the existing systems. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of see that threesome, if you would. There will be, first, we've got to make sure that we've got it, that we're fixing what we have out there and that we're maintaining that in a very good state of good repair. We do need to make strategic expansion investments. I think and then in addition to that, we have to make sure that we do the modernization a whole lot more in terms of technology. Oh, my God, the world is just dramatically changing, and I think you've seen the T. I can tell you from an industry-wide perspective, the T has really become a leader in terms of application of information, new technologies, these mobile applications that I think have really done a lot to help keep our ridership up, even though we had to wind up.
Yeah, we've done some conversations with some of the mm-hmm. folks who've so designed those apps.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So that's kind of the kind of the vision that I see in terms of all of us. Talking and thinking better together, which to me, this reform that's taking place in terms of one DOT, I think that the benefits that it winds up paying off for the Commonwealth over the long haul are going to be tremendous.
Bruce, thanks so much for the call. Our number is 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. You can tweet us at Boss Public Radio or write to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Boston Public Radio. Janella from Roslindale, go ahead, please. You're on with Beverly Scott, the new MBTA GM on 89. Go ahead.
Afternoon, Ms. Scott, and welcome to the tea, and Happy New Year to you, ma'am.
Oh, thank you so much.
And I hope you had a nice Christmas.
Do you know I did? I actually went, and I my family's in Colorado, so I didn't get back to Colorado because I just started here, but I did get to spend that with some friends in Rhode Island. So I actually had my first ride since I've been back on commuter rail to go down and back, and so that was a lot of fun.
Oh, well, hopefully I can meet you in person.
I look forward to
it. Ms. Scott, I have an issue with the buses. What type of service are you going to be increasing services, say, like in the black community, say, like the number 16 bus? It seems like the number 16 buses always run really late. And I do not own an automobile, but due to the fact that I live in Roslindale, the buses run pretty frequently out here. So are you going to be addressing the issues of having more services in the minority communities, ma'am?
Oh, let me tell you, across the board, okay? And so the issue, and I did have a chance to look at the recent report that came through in terms of showing some of the disparities that exist in terms of travel times.
That was from the Dukakis Center.
The Dukakis Center as well. Mm-hmm. And so I can tell you that issues of service equity are always uppermost, Title VI, environmental justice, but just trying to make sure that the service that we provide overall is very fair, is very rational in terms of how we've done it, and that we hold ourselves to really high standards across the board in terms of on-time performance and service reliability. And so you can expect that from me. Once again, I said, it as far as I'm concerned, I look at the communities that we need to serve, and I look at them with I look at them, and I'm not being naive in terms of when I say I look at them as one blanket. And I'm not being naive that you need to look behind the blanket. But at the same time, the commitment that you have in terms of being fair and straightforward and trying to make sure that every single part of the community that needs to have service has that service and that we're running it the best that we can, you absolutely have that commitment.
Thank you for the call, Janelle.
Thank you very much.
Let me follow up with her question, because one of the things that report indicated is that the ridership is very high in those communities, but people like Janelle who are pointing out that the service does not match the level of ridership. And we should note that ridership overall is up 1.3 from last year this time. But should it not be that where ridership is highest, service should at least match that?
Yeah, and what's happened is that, and I just bear with me because I haven't been here long enough, but let me tell you what I would not be surprised, because it's the same thing that's happened in many, is that demographics and everything change in areas over time. And to tell you the honest to God's truth, most public transit systems have been so strapped that the kind of what you call ability to really be able to do that real up-to-the-minute service planning that winds up adjusting what you're doing with hundreds of routes based upon how your demographic has been changing. Many of the systems, they wind up, and you look at it, and been running a bus the same way we've been running the bus.
Nobody. So not as nimble as
not
as
nimble
as could be,
and not as nimble as could be, and it becomes difficult because most of that always calls for different investment. Okay, the other thing that's wound up happening through the years too is that we've started getting a lot of spatial mismatches, and so what's happened in this all, you know, over 15-20 year period of time with this whole thing of, oh, you know, we can move a little further out because it's cheaper to move a little bit further out. And guess what? The gas prices weren't high. Mm. So in some communities, what we've wound up finding is that, yes, that might have been how you went and bought your house and did all of that 15 years ago. And all of that worked. But now what's wound up happening is that it's wound up coming and saying, oh, my God, we got a different rubber band that wound up taking place. And so the ability, but all those things take funding to be able to kind of get that and then kind of looking and thinking of it in a different way. So what I can say to you is that all of that, I can see it in the plans and the pieces that I'm going through with the staff now. I can tell you that it's not on the MBTA plate, and we'll be working with the community.
A couple quick questions from both Twitter and Facebook. First, from Twitter, Emily says, the bus schedule changes every 3 months. Why?
What happens is that transit systems have, it doesn't matter where it's, whether they're called picks or choose-ups or markups or whatever, we wind up doing the changing of the schedules, and it's usually a seasonal thing, okay? Yeah. And it's, you know, and much of it coincides with, you know, when schools come in and schools go out. And so by contract, and usually those will wind up being 3 times a year or 4 times a year, every transit system winds up having a change of schedule, if you will, and that's what winds up happening.
Okay, from Facebook, why are weekly passes not available for Charlie cards, and can that be changed?
That'll be something that I'll just take a look at.
Okay, very good. Okay. So we have Josh from Billerica. Go ahead, please. You're on 89.7 WGBH here with new MBTA GM, Beverly Scott.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was hoping that your guest could comment on the problem that I have in my situation, living out in the suburbs in Billerica. I'd like to use public transportation more, but ultimately, the way it stands now, it's much more expensive when you consider, you know, parking at the Billerica station, taking the commuter rail in, and then using the subway to get to my destination. it's much more expensive for me to use public transportation compared to if I drove in and the cost of gas and parking in the city. And I was hoping your guests could comment on, you know, from a sustainability and, you know, greenhouse gas emissions and such, I would like to use public transportation more, but it's just it's so much more expensive. And how could we address that issue?
But before Beverly Scott answers, let me just ask this question, Josh. What we know here from many conversations we've had in the past on Boston Public Radio is that a lot of representatives who are representing communities outside of Boston are not really supportive of the T. Just want to put that on the table. Or the commuter rails, because they don't feel as though it has as much impact on their communities. Wondering if your representative has heard you and that's clear to them, because this is the fight that happens at the legislature every year in the past. And I'm going to allow the our new GM to respond, but I did want to put that on the table too, so you had, there is some context as well.
Right. And you know, I think that one of the things that happens with that as well is this, it is something that has to happen as a function, honestly, of a broader community understanding of what is the cost for things and what do we value, okay? I hear what you're saying, which is, you know, gee, it still costs me more to do X. But then I could tell you that when we all get into it, we say, well, why does it cost you less? Is there something that we want to do with parking prices that will, in fact, wind up? You have to have carrots and you have to have sticks, okay? And so it's not something that's just a... it's not just a fair tea conversation. It's really a how are we going to value all the different pieces that go along to making that that trip, if you will. And then you wind up doing things, and that's literally what they've been doing in other countries for years. It's not by chance that they wind up having the mode splits that they have, because what they've done is that the prices of petroleum were much higher, the prices of parking were much higher, and those kinds of things were done largely to wind up honestly making transit in your alternative modes really the systems of first choice, if you will, as opposed to
last.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so some of that has to all come into play so that when we would have this conversation at a future date, maybe one of the things that you could say to me, because you're not saying to me, Bev, the reason I don't do it is because it's not a good service, but it's not as cost effective, would be to say, well, you know what? Yeah, there were some changes and I looked at this all now. And you know what? It actually does make a lot more sense for me to wind up being able to use public transit as a competitive option because it's more affordable.
Thank you so much for the call. Okay. Our number is 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. You can tweet us at Boss Public Radio or write to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Boston Public Radio. I'm in the studio with Beverly Scott, who is the new MBTA GM. And you literally have been on the job for a few weeks. So you've done a couple things since then, you know, that we know about publicly. So you were at the Orange and Blue Lines looking at those, speaking of technology, the countdown signs that just got implemented.
Wonderful.
And I know you've been talking to passengers every day as you ride the T yourself to try to get to know them.
Right.
And I'm impressed that you are not a Scrooge in that you intervened on the Christmas Carol kerfuffle at one of the stations where Christmas carolers wanted to perform. The MBTA Transit Police properly arrested them. They had no permit. And right. You came back and fixed it.
Oh, it was, and you know, and I have a voice like a bullfrog, right? I cannot sing. It was so much fun. And I have, and Pastor Ruth, she told me that I could actually be an honorary member of the choir so that I, but it was so much fun. And so we had all's well. I said that this all's well that ends well. And they laugh and they whisper. They say, okay, next time we know we really have to get a permit. So we'll get a permit next time. But it was just wonderful. And you should just have seen the people coming off of the trains and everything and in the stations. And some of them just joined in and they had their kids. So it was and it also happened right around the very time, it hadn't happened at the point that, but with the terrible devastation and down in Connecticut. And I just think during this time of year, it just made everybody feel better.
It was the right note, so to speak.
Yes.
So how do you prioritize Beverly Scott, new MBTA GM, when you have a big, a lot of debt that this aging system is carrying? You got some legislative battles, not just for you. They've been in place for a while, and now you'll take them on. And you've got to prioritize what happens. You've laid out an assertive agenda of what you'd like to see happen by 2030, but you've got to get there. And what's the first thing that you think must be addressed?
The first thing that you do, and I tell my staff this all the time, is that the first thing that we have to do is put the best service that we can out on the street every single day. We basically earn our stripes every day. And so you can have the best spokespeople in the world. They can talk like Svengali and all of that, but if the quality of the product that and people will have understanding of the fact that it's 100 years old and you may not get perfection, but you're trying every day, they can have that general kind of sentiment with you. But if you're not putting your caring and your attention into that product, then there isn't enough selling that you can do. So I'm going to tell you is that that's number one priority, and that's so safe, reliable, courteous, best kind of service that we can provide. And that is now how good that service will be, how reliable that service. We're never going to defer on safety, but how reliable that service is going to be, how robust that service is going to be. Every single customer that I've talked to, I haven't had a one of them that wanted to hit me with a sausage or anything because of the fare increase. Many of them didn't like it, but they understood it.
That was a fare increase that went into effect in July.
That's right. They weren't crazy. I'm not saying I had people that were crazy about it, but they understood it. Okay, but what people want is more service. They want later service. They want more robust. So what kind of stuff? They want to have service that I've got 10 minute frequencies, 15 minute frequencies at the best on bus service, late night service. I've heard numbers of people who have said, well, couldn't the service run a little bit later? So the first thing that we have to do, though, is number one, we got to do the best we can with everything that we've got. And people have to know that we care and that it really does care. So that's number one. OK, the other is there's no question but that the funding issue, it is more than an issue. This is a tsunami, okay? And I was part of the team that was in the mid-80s in the New York system when we had the turnaround in the New York system. And it was, I mean, we were the laughing stock of the country in terms of how much of a state of disrepair the system was in. And we put our noses to the grindstone for a 6-year period of time. Everybody said we had 6,000 rail cars. They were all, most of them were graffitied up. They said, you all will never turn it around. 470 some stations, you'll never clean them up. And what you wind up doing, it's like guerrilla warfare. You put your pedal to the metal and you just keep moving and keep moving. But that also came with 20 years ago, over $12 billion in terms of a reinvestment program for the New York City transit system.
Okay? So it has to be both.
And so you have to wind up doing. There's not enough. There, I've looked at the numbers. I'm getting more into. There's not enough cutting that you can wind taking nothing away. Reform was very, very important. The work that's taking place is very important. But when you've got structural fixes, when you've got problems that are as structurally massive as they are, this is going to take structural fixes to fix structural problems. So what I'm talking about there is the billions and billions of dollars of debt that the T wound up inheriting. I mean, that is, I want to tell you that the T has the biggest debt load of any transit system in the country. Okay, and I'm saying
we're not the biggest.
Yeah. We're the fifth. Okay, and so it's things like that that the financial pieces is absolutely major. And then we've got to deliver on the projects that we have that we've got on the books today. I'm a firm believer in terms of scope, schedule, budget, and keeping commitments. And then I think that we have to be forward thinking enough to where we wind up making selective strategic investments. And I will tell you that that is in infrastructure as physical, but I am also one that is also investment in people, okay? Because workforce development, and that is priming the pump, it amazes me how many young people have absolutely little knowledge of what is actually in this transportation sector and industry that moves 20% of gross domestic product in this United States. When you talk to young people about transportation and transportation careers, they have a very limited picture of what that world is. And if anything, they see jobs. They don't see careers. And so you're going to see me proselytizing, okay, about transportation careers for priming the pump. The other is that for those employees that we have that are at the T and throughout, and we have a Mass University, DOT University that's been started, but to try to make sure that our folks are the best of the best, okay, and what's wound up, we have craftsmen and people who you can replace a general manager faster than you can replace some of the critical positions that we have, our operators, our rail controllers, our track, our signal employees. And these are people who are absolutely poetry in motion, but the work that they do and the influx of electronics and technology and everything means that the constant tooling and retooling, if you will, of our current workforce, and then all of the issues, the whole changing demographic and the silver tsunami with so many aging people, making sure that we are developing that next group of who the transportation leaders are going to be for tomorrow. So it's across the board. So that's what I see. Keeping your nose, doing what you got to do on a daily basis, making sure that we deliver on the commitments that we've got, making strategic expansion decisions. I can't say enough about the importance of technology and really appreciating that in terms of what it's doing to change the world as well as our customers' expectations and what they have to have in order to be able to knit their lives around, and the pieces I said in terms of workforce development.
All right. I'm here with Beverly Scott, who is the new general manager of the MBTA, Steve from Fall River. Go ahead, please. You're on 89.7 WGBH.
Hi. Yes, we too are a part of the Commonwealth in Fall River, New Bedford, Taunton. I think it was Bill Weld who, at the time he was governor, said that if we didn't get South Coast Rail within a specific amount of time that long has passed, that we should sue him. And I know every administration since then, including the current administration, is committed to South Coast Rail.
Yeah.
How in this advanced and strategic advancement do we get to provide a segment of the Commonwealth that's the only segment, only urban segment in the Commonwealth that's not connected to the capital city?
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that it's been very clear from my secretary to me and our board that it's more than just a commitment, that in terms of all of the plans that we have advanced, South Coast Rail and the keeping of that commitment relative to the implementation of South Coast Rail is a part of those plans.
All right. A quick answer from Janine, who wrote to Facebook. Janine would like you to address the B and C line policy of one door opening. Do you know anything about this?
I know about it. I know about it a bit. OK. And it's really I know that we're going to be having more conversations about it. But I tell you the honest to God's truth, it's really the best that we could kind of come up with, if you will, in terms of trying to make sure that we do what we need to do with our customers, but that we are also able to wind up being able to do what we can relative to our fares.
And me, Callie Crossley, wants to know, why was there a delay on the red line today? Going and coming, Beverly Scott.
I know. We just had a few little difficulties there, but we did get everything up and operational again. That's it.
All right. I'm going to hold you to it. I know where to find you.
I know. That's right. And you will really know where to find me on the system, because I tell you the honest God's truth, I have said it. And I really think I'm not going to bring a car, okay? And so I'm going to be out there walking and riding, and I'm still in the hotel, but I did find my place. So I'm going to have the number one bus, and I'm going to have the convention center is going to be my home station. And I'm doing more walking, and I'm actually ashamed to say it, okay? I am doing more walking, and I have done more walking in the last 2 weeks continuously than I probably did in Atlanta in 6 months.
Well, okay. We want that to be a part of your own plan and not because of a delay on the T. So thank you so
You're
much.
You're so welcome. You know
thank
that's
you
right.
so much. We've been talking with the new manager of the MBTA, Beverly Scott. Thanks again for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much. And I want to come back.
That's it.
Coming up next, Emily Rooney talks with former U.S. Senator Paul Kirk, who took over after the passing of Edward Kennedy in 2009. I'm Callie Crossley. The conversation continues on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.